Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Azban, here with my friend and Chavruta Ann Gordon. Our daf today, Masechet Eruvin, daf Nun Aleph, 51. Well, we hope everybody had a good Yom Kippur, a meaningful Yom Kippur. And as we know, the daf doesn't wait for anybody, so we're just going to go straight into it. I'm going to start with what I thought was actually somewhat of a very interesting story at the top of the daf that reads as follows. Rabbi Vivar Yosef, Haveka Azle Beorcha. So Rabbi and Rav Yosef were going somewhere together. Amarle Rabbi L'Rav Yosef. Rabbi says to Rav Yosef, Tehei Shivitatenu Tute Dekale Deseva Achuya. Right? So he says, they're obviously we're traveling Erev Shabbat, and he says, we're going to make our residence underneath that palm tree. The literal words here are that carry its brother. So it's not clear exactly what that means, but it means maybe it was like leaning on another tree or something like that. But it was a way of describing very specifically which tree it was, right? Because remember, we had talked about in the past few dapim that you can't just say, I'm making it by the tree. We want to be sort of as specific as possible with our description as to where the residence is actually going to be for Shabbat. But Amri Lay, right? The residence, sorry, to make the, you know, Erevei Tehumim. But Amri Lay, and he says back to him, or he says to Rabba, Tute dikla farig mari mi kiraka, right? So he says, and some say that what Rabbi actually said to him was, right, our residence will be beneath this palm that spared its owner from land tax. That's what kraga means, right? So that what it means is that the palm was, this tree was, had enough dates that the owner could pay all of his taxes just with these dates, all right? So then Rabba says, Yada le mar. So he says, do you know what tree this is, Rav Yosef? Amar le, lo yadana le. So he says to him, nope, I don't actually know which tree this is. Amar le, smoch alai. So he says, you can just rely on me. Why? Detanin. So he quotes a brisa here. Rabbi Yosef Omer, ima yushnaim, echad makir, v'echad she'eno makir, ze she'eno makir, moser shivatato lemakir. Ze shemakir, omei tehe shivatatino b'makom poloni. Right, so he quotes a brisa which teaches the following. Rabbi Yossi says, if there were two people walking together, one who was like familiar with that location, right, or the familiar with the location that was going to be upcoming that they were going to have to make their Eruvin, and one who's not familiar with it, okay, the one who's not familiar basically allows the one who's more familiar with the place to figure out where to make the residence, right? Because the idea is that the person who's familiar is going to know where to where to make the residence, because he'll be able to describe a particular place. So he's saying, look, you can rely on me to do it, because we know that this was Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Okay, now the Gemara makes a very interesting comment and says, V'lachi latane le Rabbi Yossi. But the Gemara says, wait, this is not actually the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. This is, he's like quoting a brisa in the name of Rabbi Yossi, but that's not actually what Rabbi Yossi said. Eliki hechi delekabe lemine mishun de Rabbi Yossi nimuki imo. So basically, what did Rabbi do? He taught this opinion as if it was the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Yossi would accept it from him because he sort of follows Rabbi Yossi's reasonings for his halacha, right? He would be more likely to follow this if he knew it was Rabbi Yossi. Now, I thought this was like fascinating, because this brisa that he quotes, is it a real brisa? Did he just tack on Rabbi Yossi's name? And sort of the idea that like Rabbi knew that he and Rabbi Yossi were sort of in a particular situation. He needed to make sure they had this Erev Tehumim farther, but he knew it was going to be hard to get him to sort of wrap his head around actually doing it. And so therefore, what does he do? He basically sort of, I don't know, I guess like makes up an opinion, right, Anne? Like, I think it's really as simple as that in order to get him to actually accept it. And the Gemara just kind of like accepts him doing this. He doesn't really, you know, I don't feel like the Gemara sort of says that he should not have done it. It's just like, oh yeah, this makes sense. He wanted to make sure, that he would go ahead and, that Rav Yosef would be willing to sort of, you know, do this opinion of allowing the person who's makir the place, you know, to actually designate the residence. I just thought this was such a bizarre story.
I'll add to it, which is that the notes in the Steintels and the Koran version make the point that in the Tosefta, I want to credit the notes here because I didn't go looking it up in the Tosefta, but that in the Tosefta, this statement is just given in the name of Rabbi Yossi. So it's not, I don't know if it's as clear cut as all that. That it wasn't really Rabbi Yossi. Like, I understand that it was a statement as far as he was concerned that didn't have his name, so he added it in, but maybe he knew something.
Oh, so that's interesting. So they have a Tosefta that does have it, but the Gemara clearly says it wasn't really his opinion.
Right, so I'm puzzled.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story, and I think it just raises a bigger question, which is sort of like, do we tell a white lie to get somebody to sort of do, like, that's basically what he did. It's telling a white lie or maybe embellishing something in order to get somebody to solve a problem, right? Like, I'm assuming it was Erev Shabbat. They needed to get this solved. He knew, you know, Rav Yosef may be a holdout a little bit. So he bends something a certain way to get him to do what he needs him to do.
Right. It gives the authority. He was trying to give his statement. The logic holds, right? His own statement can stand on its own. He just seems to be concerned that his buddy there, Rav Yosef, won't accept it without the Tana's authority.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's all. I don't have more to say on it, just that it's really interesting.
Well, the one other thing I would add is that this is all really still part of the discussion of Rav's opinion, that you need to be very specific if you're going to, like, you're going to establish residence under a tree, right? So this is, again, under a tree, and the question is, how specific can you be? It's still part of that discussion, even though it's not directly addressing Rav's statement. I want to go to the next little bit of the Gemara, which is a sidebar, really, to the rest of the discussion of the Gemara, but it takes us back to an important question, namely, what's our source for the 2,000 amot for Erev Tchumen, right? The same way that we already talked about, where do we get our Dalet amot from? The Gemara now asks, where do we get our 2,000 amot from? Hani alpayim amah hechan ktivan, where are they written in the Torah? Titania shvul ish tachtav. Now, these are the same verses that we saw with regard to the sources for the Dalet amot, in talking about, they're talking about the collecting of the manna that was, you know, given as a double portion, right? And how far did one have to go? So the Gemara says, "Shvul ish tachtav," that each person should remain in his place. So in his place, that's the dalet amot. And the Gemara here says, "Elu arba amot." Al yetzei ish mimkomo. So the verse continues, and it says a person should not go out mimkomo from his place. Elo alpayim amah, and that is the 2,000 amot that for the Erev Tchumen, that one should not go far. Now, of course, the question is, how do you know that mimkomo equals 2,000 amot? And so the Gemara says, manalan, where do you get that, right? Where do we get this measure? The distance is going to be 2,000 amot. Amar Rav Chista, lamanu makom mimakom. So we have here, we learn one location with the word makom from another location, another pasuk with the word makom. Specifically, this is actually a little bit later, right, where it says, this is in Shmot Kaf Aleph, that I will appoint you a place to where he shall flee. Meaning, when we're talking about somebody who is, who kills unwittingly, right? This is someone who's a murderer, but unintentionally, he kills Beshogeg, and so then he can run away, and not be subject to a punishment from the Goel Hadam, from a revenge killing from the family, right? So that he can go out from he says, I will appoint you a place to where he will flee. So then the Gemara says, Mamakom minisa. So the place gets you to fleeing. Vinisa minisa. And then there's another verse for fleeing, one second, which says, this is in Bamidbar. And again, talking here about the Ari Miklat, if the murderer shall go, well, again, it's not really a murderer. It's somebody who kills unwittingly. If that person comes to the border of the Ir Miklat, to where he has fled, Venisa migvul, and at the time, so then we have fleeing from gvul, gvul meaning border, and the border is also there in Bamidbar, but the Ari Miklat, the term border is derived from the term border, right? That the Goel Hadam, the person from the family of the person who has been killed, wants to come after the person who has done this killing Bishoge. And so he comes michutz, the borders of the city of refuge, meaning the Ir Miklat. Okay, so they have gvul gvul, that's border to border. Vgvul michutz, chutz is the outside of the borders. Vchutz michutz, and then finally, excuse me, finally the last verse is again still talking about the Ir Miklat, that you shall measure michutz, the city, on the east side 2,000 amot, and on the south side 2,000 amot, and on the west side 2,000 amot, and on the north side 2,000 amot. And this is all a verse from Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, chapter 35, which is a very long connection of terms, right? It's, I want to say it's a Gezeirah Shavah, but it's kind of tricky that it would be so many, right, to get from one place to the next. Like, again, so I'm going to just read through them so you hear how many jumps this is, how many different verses we jump through to get here. Mimakom, lamanu makom mimakom, umakom minisa, vinisa minisa, vinisa migvul, vagul gvul migvul, vagvul michutz, vachutz michutz, dechtiv, and here we have at the very end, umadota michutz lair et pa'at kadmat alpayim ba'amad. That's that verse, that last verse at the end. So on the one hand, it's really a lot of terms to make this connection work from verse to verse. And on the other hand, it's really pretty much two stories, right, that talk about the distance that one might go. And the question is, you know, when you say in the context of Shabbos and the manna that a person should not leave from his place, and then you talk about somebody who kills Bishogeg, an unwitting murderer who ends up needing to leave from his place, and that's really, and then you say, well, where is he going? And in that context, you have a discussion that specifies exactly what his space is going to be, namely 2,000 amot. It's not as difficult, I think, as it kind of feels with all of these linking terms.
Well, this is like the Gezeirah Shavah of all Gezeirah Shavahs, right?
Right, except for they don't call it a Gezeirah Shavah, which I find to be, I also find that to be odd, as opposed to, let's say, when we'll, you know, the Gezeirah Shavah that talks about Minyan, which is also like a couple of steps, a double Gezeirah Shavah to get to the end of it. This is many more than a double, than two steps. And yet they don't use the term Gezeirah Shavah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also interesting to see how they like try to say like, oh, but you could use, you know, later on, you know, you could use this one instead, right? Or, you know, that there were different ways to sort of work it out or to get to that 2000. From this like whole, it's just basically a chain of words, right? But that maybe
right.
Rashid has an opinion that maybe it could have actually been shortened. Yeah, I do see that. I'm even looking right now, and you're right. They don't actually call it a Gezeirah Shavah, which is very interesting. Oh no, here they do. They do in one
they
place.
Do.
Yes, for Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus.
Okay, so take it back.
Right, no, but it's an opinion. It's not set up that way, right? So it says when they're talking about it's not on this topic. It's talking about later on when they talk about alpaim ama agulot, right? Whether or not we say the 2,000 amot are a square or a circle. So Rabbi, it says, V'Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus ma nafsheich yi'is le'gezeirah shavah, right? So he does it as a circle, right? But he does it as a gezeirah shavah. So it's interesting that that term only appears later on.
Right. I'm going to leave this open as a tzarich iyun, meaning I think it, you know, I think it begs further investigation to understand exactly, you know, how this applies to, how this compares rather to other Gezeirah Shavahs and so on, except for we know that at the very least, the way it compares is that it's a lot of steps. And yet again, it's still only really two halachic contexts. So that's why I think it makes it more palatable to me. In any case, that we needed a source, right? Meaning, how do we get 2,000 amot? So we understand that it's, you know, a connection between the Ir Miklat story, the city of refuge distancing, and Shabbos, and the man.
Well, I guess the theme of this episode is we each discuss something that we don't have good definitive answers on, and we're just going to leave them as open questions. That's the theme today. Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about some of these questions that we raised on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.